owe them, but very few of us know them. They took an oath to protect us at home and abroad, so the rest of us can live safe and free. They are the men and women of our military and first responder communities, and these are their stories. American Warrior Radio is on the air.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a special Independence Day edition of American Warrior Radio. Over the last 8 years of producing and hosting this program, I've had the honor of talking with hundreds of outstanding guests, veterans, first responders, and civilians alike. Because I never wore a uniform or a badge, I consider it my duty to support those who do and have. Doing this show has been a privilege, and honestly, it's rare that I don't learn something new or find some type of inspiration from our guests. In the words of a recent guest, John Mollison, history is nutritious. So on this, the 245th anniversary of our nation's founding, I would like to share some of their perspectives on freedom and liberty. Stay tuned for some powerful, inspirational, and thought-provoking thoughts from Matthew Marsden, Vietnam POW Lee Ellis, Gary Sinise, and Paul Leffler, host of the syndicated program Hometown Heroes. Please enjoy and have a safe Independence Day weekend. Now, many of you know I was raised overseas and came to the United States at the age of 9. I have also traveled to many other countries, some of whom philosophies would be considered exactly the opposite of those values of freedom and liberty enshrined in our Declaration of Independence. Examining the promise and exceptional nature of our nation through this outside-looking-in lens gives me a different perspective. Over the years of doing this show, I've had many great patriots share their thoughts and ideas, but one that has always stood out and quite frankly surprised me was this guy. Did this really start for you when you were filming Black Hawk Down? I read an interview with you where you were talking with a ranger when you were doing that film, and what he said inspired you. Tell us that story.
Yeah, so I came over to do Black Hawk Down because I didn't want to come over to America and be a bum. You know, I wanted to come over and contribute, and you know, I didn't want to come over if I didn't have anything. And when I got Black Hawk Down, that was the first opportunity I had to come here. So I came over, we were doing training at Fort Benning, which I just couldn't believe I got the chance to do. It was just the greatest thing. And we were sitting outside, and there was a young Army Ranger there, couldn't have been any older than like 19 years old. And, you know, doing the actor thing, asking, oh, you know, what's your training, what's your mentality, what's this, what's your background, where are you from? I eventually said, why did you join? You know, because when I grew up, a lot of my friends joined the military, but it was for a different motivation, you know. So I said to him, why did you join? And he said, for freedom. And as someone from Europe, that was the Europeans kind of even mock that, you know, oh, freedom fries or for freedom or American. And I never did. But to hear it coming out of the mouth of a soldier, it just floored me. And I said to him, well, you'd die for me, wouldn't you? It was a real moment, you know. Mm-hmm. And he said, yes, sir. Yes, sir. And I just went, oh, man, these guys are unbelievable. This is the greatest country in the world. You know, I can't believe I'll get the chance to be around these guys and be a part of something that is so special. And that was it. I'm like, you know what? I want to do as many military roles as I possibly can. I want to be able to portray these guys correctly, and I get to be, you know, what I believe is the best of Americans. You know, these are the guys that are the backbone of the greatest country there's ever been. You know, so that was the beginning for me, and then I started reading about I'm like, well, why is America so great? You know, why is it that these guys would die for the freedom of other people? It's not just Americans. They would die for me. They're Brit, you know, because freedom is so important to them. So that's when I started reading about, you know, the War of Independence and the Constitution, you know, and all those kind of things, reading about the amendments and really understanding why America is what it is and why Americans are what they are and why it is such a – why it is the last – best, greatest hope for the world, you know. And I think that when you come from somewhere else and you come here, you really appreciate it. You know what I mean? Like, I there's nowhere else to go, Ben. America is the last place, the last bastion of freedom on the planet. And that is one of the things when I first came back after we shot Black Hawk Down and after September the 11th, I was driving down the street and every house had a flag on it.
Mm-hmm.
every hat, and people don't understand, like, even that is so special. Like, you can't do that in Europe anymore. You can't fly your flags anymore and be proud of your country. And Americans should never, ever let go of that. Ever.
Well, there you have it, folks. Who better to bring on for Independence Day was that guy, a fellow immigrant who surprised me. Mr. Matthew Marsden, welcome back to American Warrior Radio.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Ben. It's a real honor to be back.
Well, sorry about the long intro, but it's been so long. I wanted to, you know, make sure you heard your own words again. So you're prepped, Matthew. You're good to go.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. When we were having that conversation, I was in the parking lot somewhere, I believe, in just outside of Fort Bragg. So I was listening back to it, and I'm like, wow, you know, rambling a little bit, but the sentiments are absolutely the same. I mean, I think that what we've seen over the past few months really has been an assault on the American idea, and it just cannot continue. I mean, I love this country deeply. I think that the majority of people that come here, you know, people say how bad this country is, I think, from the inside. You know, you got people protesting about how bad this country is, yet there are millions of people knocking down the door to get in here. So, you know, I think it's absolutely right. When you travel, when you get outside the country and you come here and you understand actually what this country is, what, you know, the principles that it was founded on and how special it is, you tend to appreciate it a little bit more, if not a lot more, and you want to fight for that. You want to fight to preserve it because it really is special. But when I came to the United States, it didn't matter where I came from. It didn't matter what my background was. All that people cared about was, you know, was I willing to work hard? Was I willing to, you know, embrace the culture? And I was. So it's a very different kind of mindset. And up until very recently, I think that most Americans, even if, you know, they were, you know, they have manual jobs or haven't had a lot of success, they kind of applaud success. Americans applaud people doing well, picking themselves up and working hard and achieving things. And that is not the case in the majority of the world. You know, the majority of the world will have what we call in England, like, the tall poppy syndrome, where, like, hey, listen, you know, don't get too big for your boots. But here in America, it's like, you can do anything. You can do anything you put your mind to. And there are people out there that will embrace you for that and embrace where you come from. Like, I have never felt a foreigner in this country, Ben. Never. Mm. I think that a lot of people just don't understand how special and how different America is. And it's all to do with the founding and the great people that were involved in that. I mean, you'd be hard pushed to find any time in history where you get a group of individuals that would come up with something so brilliant as the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. I mean, it really is. So it all really stems back to that
perspective. And I guess maybe as an actor it makes sense now, because your job is to know the human condition and understand it so you can mimic it later on in your profession. But coming back to the point about you made about the Constitution, the people, that document, it doesn't automatically autocorrect. It requires all of us as citizens to remain engaged and educated and remember that history and that perspective. Yeah.
No, absolutely. And I think the more that you study the history of this country and you look at the way the different branches of government work and you look at the Constitution, you realize that it really is a miracle. I mean, the way this country was formed was an absolute miracle.
Coming up next, you don't know what you have until you lose it. Colonel Lee Ellis spent 5.5 years as a POW in Vietnam and shares some powerful thoughts on freedom and liberty. For our listeners who weren't tuned in at that time, Colonel Lee Ellis, you are a pilot, you're a consultant, a speaker. We see you on the national circuit quite a bit. Also the author of Leading with Honor, Leadership Lessons from the Hanoi Hilton. Now, Lee, number one, Lee, welcome back to American Warrior.
Oh, thank you very much, Ben. Good to be with you today.
Well, I'm so glad to have you join us. Now, so often it's said we don't know what we've got until we've lost it. And as we're talking today about independence and freedom and liberty, you had one of the most extreme cases that I can think of having lost your freedom and liberty. You were I won't use the word guest, a prisoner of war in the notorious Hanoi Hilton from November of 67 through March of 1973, correct?
Yes, that's correct. It was, generically speaking, we talk of all the camps being the Hanoi Hilton, but I was in Hanoi Hilton for 9 months and then away in another camp out of Sante for 2 years, then back to the Hilton for a couple of years and in the mountains for about 9 months and then in a release camp there in town for a couple of months. So it was it all focused right around Hanoi.
Now, Lee, what, for our listeners, there's so many things that we do in America and that we don't even think twice about. Just this last night, I went out and took a walk around the neighborhood. Don't think about that necessarily in the context of independence and freedom and liberty, but I was free to make a choice and to do it. But when you were locked up there in Vietnam, all of a sudden you didn't have any of those choices anymore. Can you kind of speak about sort of the initial shock of, or maybe that you didn't appreciate what you had until you didn't have it anymore? Or what were your thoughts when you first were a prisoner there?
Well, I think the first thing is I did appreciate the fact that I was still alive,
mm-hmm.
Because that was in question a couple of times en route to Hanoi when my airplane was shot out from under me there over enemy territory and almost landed right in the hands of the gunners, but they were surrounded me and captured me within a couple of minutes. So once the shock settled in and started, I started to accustomize myself to the shock of being in a POW in a place like the Hanoi Hilton, which was a real kind of like a medieval bastille there. I did want freedom so badly. You know, some of the things that I wanted most was to see the sunrise, to see stars at night. But as my friend Paul Galani says, you know, when the lock is on the outside and somebody's locked you in, you don't have that option. And that was just being locked up and knowing that I couldn't walk out the door and go look at the sky was a big thing for me. And then over the years, not having any choices much at all except, whether or not I would eat fast or slow, my little bowl of soup, those kind of things, but not many choices. So coming home, it was just incredibly wonderful to be free, to be able to walk out in the yard at day or night, see the sky, walk around as you were talking about taking a walk. It was fabulous.
Now, did you and your fellow prisoners of war, did the subject, I have to guess that the subject of freedom and the appreciation of what you had came up on occasion?
Yeah, it did, and I think it was along the lines of which we're speaking right now, and that was that, you know, people at home don't have any idea what it's like to lose their freedom. I mean, this is something our country has accepted as being just kind of a thing that happens automatically for us, that we don't really appreciate it that much, being able to be free to get in a car and go somewhere or to take a walk or to choose to go to bed or not to go to bed, those kind of things. It's become so accepted and so commonplace. It's part of our way of life, and that's a good thing. But also, it's not so good to just take that for granted because so many people in the world didn't have that.
Well, and Colonel, that's precisely why I wanted to get your perspective on this show here today, was because you've seen, as an American who's lived that and appreciated it and perhaps taken it for granted, then you saw the most extreme other side of that coin. And not just the big things like voting or some of the other, you know, kind of sort of constitutional things we think about, but
mm-hmm.
like you said, the just basics. I can't leave when I want. I can't sleep when I want. Just the, so you
yeah.
were deprived of some of the most basic items.
Exactly. And one of the biggest things that bothered me then and bothers me now in some ways is the propaganda. We had propaganda three times a day. The Communist Party, every word was chosen by them to make you feel a certain way. A lot of people in politics want to make you feel a certain way rather than look at logic or facts. They just want to make you feel, and that's what the communists do. So morning, noon, and night, we had this propaganda, a little bit of truth and a whole lot of lies to make us, try to get us to believe a certain way, to think a certain way, and ultimately to try to convince us that we should side with them in the war.
Wow, so it wasn't just the freedom of movement or the freedom of choice, but literally, in your case, the freedom of thought.
Well, that's right. Well, they tried to intrude on our thoughts with this propaganda. Here's the thing. Every cell had a speaker in it. except one up in the mountains. There was no electricity, so we didn't have a speaker. But every other cell, for more than almost 5 full years, we had 3 times a day, we had propaganda blasted into our room. And it was no less for the local populace because they had speakers blaring into the rice field up and down the streets. And they still do, but now they only do it once a day, I think, because I was over there in February and I saw some T-shirts that said, basically, we get our morning propaganda at 6:30, and they showed some loudspeakers. So they were kind of making fun of the Communist Party's propaganda every day.
Now, Lee, when you finally were released and came back, I'm sure that was a joyous feeling. But what was one of the first things you did when you got back, if you remember, to express your freedom and your newly regained liberty?
Well, the thing that I probably on a day-to-day basis that we most all missed was freedom to choose what we ate, because eating is a very personal and thing, something you want to do every day. And I used to have dreams almost every night the first year or so. We were always hungry. And I would be dreaming I was in a cafeteria with a tray going through getting eggs and sausage and bacon and toast and pancakes and orange juice and coffee and all that. And when I came home, we landed about 4:30 in the afternoon at Clark Air Base in the Philippines. We went straight to the hospital. We dumped our release clothes and put on the hospital pajamas and a robe and some slippers, and we went straight to the chow hall. And we got in that line with our trays, and I loaded up with several eggs and sausage and bacon and ham and toast and grits and hash browns and ate that. And then I went back and got a steak and a couple more eggs. And then I went back and got ice cream and ice pie and ice cream.
Sometimes it's the basic things, right?
Sometimes it's the very basic things. And then I was able to, that night, I called home and talked to my family and had a really good visit with them. I called them again the next day. Then we went down and got a uniform, and that was a very exciting experience to get a uniform again. And then we started making, you know, that we did a two days of quick physicals and a haircut, uniform, and then we got on an airplane and flew back to the States and met our families. And it was all great. We didn't have to make many choices there, but when I started going shopping and had to start making choices again, it was almost overwhelming.
Now, Lee, we've got just about a minute before the next break, but what are you noticing now?
I think the thing that I see as the greatest threat to our freedom right now is lies or the absence of truth. People call it spin. You can call it whatever you want to, but propaganda, spin, lies. There's just way too much of that going on. It's become more of an accepted thing in politics, and I'm seeing a business seems to be getting cleaned up, but the educational institutions are propagandizing right and left. It seems like everybody's doing everything they can to promote their ideology rather than promoting the truth and the facts and the foundations of our freedom. And I think that's the biggest threat we have right now. We need to stand for truth. We need to demand truth. We need to hold ourselves accountable and others accountable for the truth, because the truth always sets you free.
Wonderful, wonderful. Colonel Ellis, Lee Ellis, thank you so much for what you've done to preserve freedom and independence and liberty in our country. I wish you the best, sir, and thanks for checking back in with American Warrior.
Thank you, Ben. Always good to chat with you, and God bless.
You too, sir.
Gary Sinise spent much of his career as a shining example of what can be achieved when one has a passion for supporting the men and women of our military and first responder communities. Some of our conversation coming up next.
We're joined with one of our other more popular past guests on American Warrior, actor, musician, my favorite part, musician, Gary Sinise. Gary, welcome back to American Warrior.
Thanks for having me, Ben. Good to be here.
Well, Gary, I tell you what, I personally feel that in the dictionary under the word patriot, there ought to be your picture. I'm serious. The amount of things that you do for our men and women in the military and to advance the principles of military service and freedom, all of us should take some time to thank you very much. They can visit GarySiniseFoundation.org to find out more about what you're doing and to pitch in to help out, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Go to GarySiniseFoundation.org. Lots of great stuff on the website, on the blog page. You'll be able to look at the history of different events and different things we're involved in. And we have a lot of money to raise, because there's a lot of need. We've been at war for a long time now, And, you know, unfortunately, the men and women who serve our country and who get hurt and the Gold Star families who lose loved ones, they aren't always on the front pages, as we're seeing now. And so they have a lot of needs after a lot of sacrifice over these many, many years. And it's up to all of us to pitch in and try to give back and do something to support them. I believe they are, after all, our freedom providers, and that we can never take what they do and what they sacrifice for granted.
Well, and Gary, that's really why I wanted to have you part of this discussion as we're talking about independence and freedom and liberty. And I'll tell you, frankly, it was something that you said at your concert here at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base that inspired me to put together this program on Independence Day weekend. And it was an intro that you did just before, I believe it was the final song of the concert. And you spent some time talking to the folks there about your time in Korea and how you had seen how, you know, that many years ago, the folks on the south side, South Korea, ended up being the lucky ones. And the folks in North Korea, they don't even understand. They've got no concept of freedom and liberty. I don't know if you remember that moment. You probably, I don't know if you say that at all the concerts or not, but can you maybe just sort of reprise that feeling that you felt that you've seen out there on the road?
Well, it's something that I share from time to time because I like to tell people, you know, share experiences and stories of things that I've seen in my travels, to support the men and women who serve. And I remember being up on the DMZ between North and South Korea. I've been there a couple times, and the first time was especially, kind of eerie because you can stand right on the border, and about 100 yards away from you are North Korean guards staring back, and you have the South Koreans on the side that you're on, and then about 100 yards away you have North Korean guards staring at you with binoculars and looking at you and keeping an eye on things. And you know, you really just stand there and you realize, boy, this place right here, there's no place on earth probably where there's the palpable difference between freedom and tyranny more than standing here. I'm on the free side, and here just a few yards away from me is the slavery side.
Mm.
And all these people in North Korea who were separated from their loved ones who have been free in South Korea all this time, they have no real concept of what living in a free society is. They worship the supreme leader. If they toe the line, they might be okay. If they don't toe the line, they could end up in a slavery prison camp or, you know, even worse.
Or worse, yeah.
And this is the way the world works. You know, not everybody gets to enjoy the free society that we've grown accustomed to here. And we have to realize that freedom has to be fought for and protected and defended, and not everybody has that. There are many armies around the world that are there to take your freedom away and to oppress you rather than liberate and protect that freedom the way our military does. And so we should value those freedom providers each and every day, and realize that they will be called upon throughout the 21st century to do something dangerous, and we're lucky that we have people that are willing to put that uniform on and go defend us.
Well, well spoken, Gary, and it's precisely those kind of words that are the reason I wanted to have you share your thoughts with our listeners on this Independence Day weekend. You travel around quite a bit. You've been to, you know, as the example there in the Korean Peninsula, where you've seen the very stark physical, visible difference between those that are free and those that aren't. But have there been, when you're stateside in the United States, have you ever seen anything where it kind of makes you wonder, I guess the idea that it's not just the soldiers that need to be vigilant to defend freedom, but each of us in our everyday lives?
Oh, sure. You know, I think, unfortunately, there's a giant kind of disconnect between the military and the majority of the American people. because we, you know, when you think of the small percentage, the handful of people that actually serve in the military versus those who don't, and the fact that, you know, the majority of the country really doesn't understand what military service is because they don't have anybody in their own families who are actually serving. You realize the need to try to bridge that gap and to educate and kind of inform people as to what our military does and why it's so critical that we keep them strong and why we all are so fortunate that we have those that are willing to go out and defend our liberty, our freedom, our independence. Like I said, there's half of 1% of the American population defends this country. That means the majority of us maybe have a distant veteran in our family or something like that, but we're disconnected to the current active day service member.
Well, and Gary, that, like I said, you, of all people that I know, you're probably the leading person who's out there on a regular basis and who's engaging with those men and women who have paid the price to maintain that freedom. Some who've paid the ultimate price of their lives, but many, as you've talked about and as your foundation seeks to help, those who have survived but live now every day with maybe perhaps a new sense of a new challenge when it comes to independence.
Well, and that's a role that I see that I can play here, Ben, is just because I get to interact with the military community, on a regular basis, and I have a foundation that's supporting them, and I go to the war zones and go to military bases and that kind of thing. You know, I just feel that a way that I can serve is to share the stories of meeting the people and seeing what they do in military service and trying to help other people understand, you know. I think, you know, if more and more people understand the cost of freedom and understand why it's necessary to support that are the people that are willing to, you know, to pay that price, then maybe we'll better take care of those people when they need it. We know that the government can't do everything and certainly has failed in many ways our veterans through the Veterans Administration system. While there are some great people that work there and do great things, we know that it's a giant government bureaucracy and things are going to fall through the cracks. Well, that's where the private citizen comes in. Well, that's where the nonprofit organization comes in who is devoted to our veterans. And why I've tried to support so many of those nonprofits and then ended up starting my own, because traveling around the country and around the world where the military is and where the veterans are, and you get to see where those needs are. And then I just felt that there was a role for me to play in not only trying to educate people as to what our military does, but to try to give back to them and encourage others to do the same.
Well, and I got to tell you that when it comes to that situation, I'm very fiscally conservative, but there's some places where we shouldn't be looking to save money. And this situation with what's been happening to our veterans is tragic, and it's not at all acceptable, one bit. And all the more reason why I am so grateful, Gary, that you're out there doing what you do.
Well, thank you so much, Ben. I feel that this is a great country. Freedom is precious. We saw what happened when 19 guys with box cutters got on those planes, and the damage that they did, and that's all they had was box cutters. And we're very fortunate that we have people out there, on watch, on guard, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, to try to prevent those serious bad guys from getting more dangerous weapons.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No better words spoken. Gary, thank you so much for your time. Love to have you back sometime. Now, I tell you, I am still working on that script for CSI Tucson.
I'm telling you, look at what's happening on the border now, Gary. I mean, come on. This is a lot of good episodes there.
Well, you better get it together.
Will do, sir. Gary, best to you and your family. I hope you have a safe Independence Day, and thanks for what you continue to do for our troops. Just one other reminder, folks, if you want to, not if, you should help out. Visit GarySinisFoundation.org and let them know how you can help Gary out to support our veterans and their families. Gary, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Ben. Happy for it.
Paul Leffler and I share something in common. Neither of us served, and we have a passion for telling the stories of those who do. The producer and host of the nationally syndicated program Hometown Heroes coming up next.
Sportscaster Paul Leffler's job takes him all over the country, and that travel schedule allows him to engage in a part-time project that I appreciate, and I know American Warrior Radio listeners will too. Paul, welcome to American Warrior Radio.
Hey, great to be with you.
Now, Paul, what is this project that you began in 2005?
Well, it certainly is not what I expected to be doing in 2005. I was doing local television at the time and had a grandfather who'd always been my hero, who I knew had been highly decorated in World War II, but didn't know all the stories. And I wanted to capture his story, and I thought, you know, our local TV viewers would like to hear some more stories from World War II veterans who never talked about what they did. So I interviewed my grandpa, who got a Silver Star for pulling 26 guys out of burning tanks, and I interviewed a few other vets and put those on television, and it was very well received, won some awards. But more importantly, I saw what it meant to the families. When you would finish an interview and you hear the wife of 65, now 70, 75 years with the veterans I'm interviewing now say, I've never heard that before, or the same kind of comment from a son or daughter. And you realize that this is something that's been bottled up inside, and that when it comes out, it's not only potentially healing for the veteran, but it's so informative and educational, and I think mostly inspiring for the rest of us who didn't go through these kinds of things. So I really just got hooked on that fulfillment and that potential to present that kind of opportunity to veterans, to show them that we care, and to give them an opportunity to share those memories, to have a voice. And so I've been doing it ever since. Now it happens every week in the form of a program called Hometown Heroes. It's on the radio in a few different places. It's online at hometownheroesradio.com. But wherever I travel, you know, if I've got a ball game somewhere, I make sure to connect with veterans in that area. And my listeners send me suggestions, and so just about everywhere I go, there's somebody for me to talk to, and I can't imagine my life without the last 16 years of hearing their stories.
Paul, now, so ballpark, to see what I did there, how many veterans have you interviewed?
You know, between those two media sources, I guess probably somewhere around 1,100 or so. I don't have an exact count, but it's somewhere in that neighborhood. And, you know, I've had the privilege of interacting with a bunch of other vets, not necessarily on the program, but, you know, we started a chapter of Honor Flight where I live about 8 years ago. And every time we take about 70 vets, and one of my jobs is to call them all on the phone or sit down with them and hear their stories so we can share that with the media covering the flights. And it just always blows me away. I mean, it never ceases to amaze me what people went through and how many different aspects there are to this massive worldwide effort that was World War II. I mean, literally, I've been doing this for 16 years, and I just got done with an interview here where I learned things that I'd never heard before. I mean, it happens every single time. And the urgency of capturing these stories before it's too late is something I'm sure you understand.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's really why I wanted to talk to you, Paul, because we share something in common. We both do radio shows that are similar, and neither one of us serve, so I guess like me, you feel sort of like it's your duty to do so. But here on Independence Day, I want to talk about the why, given your interaction with these veterans. I interviewed World War II Medal of Honor recipient Woody Williams, and to this day, he still goes out and tries to educate young people about the idea that freedom isn't free. We recently had the D-Day Battle of the Bulge veteran Irv Locker on the show. He's 98 years old. He's doing the same thing, you know, educating young people. Do you get the sense too, Paul, that, you know, about the why, as you talk to these veterans about why they served and why it's important to our country, and particularly for future generations, that they never forget what they sacrificed for?
That's it. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. It's about the price of freedom. Freedom is not free. Those are the last four words of my program every single week, because no matter what a veteran did during that era, whether he was in a foxhole or in an office, whether she was ferrying airplanes or treating the wounded. No matter where these Americans were, they were contributing to something that was so significant that has affected every single one of our lives, whether we realize it on a daily basis or not. And the only way for us to really understand the price of our freedom and thus the value we should assign to it is by hearing their stories, hearing what they went through, what those who didn't come home went through. And so many of our veterans carry those memories of their friends who didn't get to enjoy the life that they enjoyed. And almost every time there is a moment in a veteran's story where it could have been them, where they know it could have been them. And sometimes it's real obvious, like the bullet that went inside the helmet but didn't penetrate the liner and came back out, or even those, you know, who have been awarded the Purple Heart because of the wounds that they suffered. Those are real obvious cases of bearing the price of freedom. But how about all of those who lost their hearing, or who had frozen feet, or who were mentally and emotionally scarred by having to go through what they went through at such a tender age? Those things are all real pieces of evidence that a price has been paid that we didn't have to pay ourselves. So I think when we hear those stories, it stirs up gratitude. It gives us perspective. Ultimately, it teaches us to value our freedom as Americans more because we really understand better the price that was paid for it.
So one of the images pre our time, Paul, that always is stuck in my mind as a fan of history, and I want to get your take on this, particularly as someone in the sports industry. It's the image of Jesse Owens at the 1936 Olympics in Nazi Germany. And he's on the gold medal winner's stand. Behind them is the German silver medal award winner, Lutz Long. And the German is given the Nazi salute. And Jesse Owens is on the top stand saluting the American flag. And that's at a time when, you know, we still weren't treating African Americans with giving their full due in our country. And yet he stood there, saluted the flag, and showed real pride in what he was doing on behalf of freedom-loving people across the world for, you know, Mr. Hitler. What as you interact out there in the sports world, what is your take on what the status, I guess, for lack of a better word, Paul, is of that pride and freedom in America out there? Or is it pretty mixed?
Boy, that's a big question. I think it's going to be a different answer on any given day. But I am encouraged by those who really do value our uniqueness as a country, the ideals we were founded on, and the price that so many have paid over the years. And you're right, that photo, I mean, what a juxtaposition of values between the USA and what that silver medalist was representing. And, you know, I've had the privilege of meeting a couple guys who competed in that Olympiad. Marty Glickman was a great sprinter from my alma mater, Syracuse, who then kind of invented a lot of the lexicon that I and other broadcasters use when we're calling a basketball game. He was prevented from competing in an event there because he was Jewish, where there was collusion between the American Olympic Committee caving in to the demands of the Nazis. And then I think of Louis Zamperini, of course, everybody knows Lucky Louis from Unbroken, and his competition there is the stuff of legend, where his fast finish on the last lap of his event had him called up to meet Adolf Hitler. And then later Louis went and climbed the pole and took down a Nazi flag, which is one of those stories you say, did that really happen? It's almost hard to believe, but yes, it did. And then I think, as you ask about sports, and you brought up the status of African Americans in those years, I've had the privilege of interviewing so many Black Americans who, you know, served under unequal conditions. They were segregated. They weren't allowed to do what other Americans were allowed to do. But they saw an opportunity. They saw a chance to prove that they were no different, that the content of their character would shine through despite the persecution. And one of the guys who I think is probably one of my all-time favorite interviews was Monty Irvin. And, you know, he's a baseball Hall of Famer, but he served in World War II. And he had been a talented professional ball player before World War II in the Negro Leagues. He goes off to World War II, comes back, and Branch Rickey wanted him to be the first African-American major leaguer before they asked Jackie Robinson. And Monty Irvin had the presence to say, you know, my balance is a little off. I was banged up in the war. I'm not as good as I once was. I need some time to recover. I would not be the best example. So you need to choose someone who is. And, you know, just to think about that, the responsibility that he felt in that moment and the focus on a bigger picture, that this is so important. We need to get this right. This matters for African Americans everywhere, and this matters for America, period. And I think it's just a reflection of so many other veterans of that era who had to make a similar choice at some point to put something above themselves, whether it was the soldier next to them, their shipmate, another member of their air crew, or just what that flag represented. I mean, you had 16 million Americans in uniform that all simultaneously were making that same kind of choice on a daily basis, and that's why we have the country we have today.
Wow. I need to have you back on for a full show sometime, Paul. You're obviously a very, very bright guy and know your history. I've always wanted one of the guests that I have not been able to get, and like you, I'm trying as hard as I can to get particularly the World War II and Korea era veterans on before they all fade away, but I'd love to have a Tuskegee Airman on the show, but I haven't had much luck. Paul, we're kind of running out of time, but just, you know, what are your observations? I know in my job, when I go out there to the base for change of command or I talk to some of these veterans, it inspires me, because a civilian, it's easy sometimes to forget the price that was paid for freedom. Do you get those moments as well out there, and is there any special ones that stand out for you?
Oh, you know, there are so many. And you're right. It never gets old. I mean, when we do the honor flight and we bring veterans back and, you know, you see age 0 to 100 there to welcome them, all with red, white, and blue, representing every corner of the political spectrum, every tax bracket, every ethnicity, all the things that other forces in our culture would try to divide us over, our veterans have the power to bring those people all together because, you know, they recognize that what these people did for us cannot be taken away. It was priceless. And here's one step further. On Independence Day, I always think about the prisoners of war who had to live in the absence of freedom and the perspective they have on what this freedom means. But I think even beyond our freedom that we celebrate, there's the question of existence. And just this one quick story, when I did interview my grandpa all those years ago, what got me started, I asked him about that incident where he pulled 26 men out of burning tanks and they gave him the Silver Star. I said, what were you thinking? Everybody else was getting out of there and you kept going back in. What were you thinking? He said, what was I thinking? I thought I was going to get killed. And I said, well, I'm glad you didn't. And he laughed and he said, yeah, you wouldn't be around. And I just wonder, I know that's the case for me. I wonder how many of your listeners right now can ask that question and say, you know, if my dad, my grandpa, one of my ancestors didn't make it through his willingness to serve our country and risk his life, if he didn't come home from that, would I be here? I mean, that when you have that kind of answer to that question, it really shakes your perspective.
Yeah, and Paul, I got to say, I was not raised in the United States. I came here when I was 9, and maybe sort of a little bit of a flip on that coin for me as I think about the opportunity I've had in this country and how I wouldn't have it, not if, you know, if not for some of those veterans who have and frankly continue to wear the uniform and fight for people all over the country to this day. So, Paul Leffler, thank you so much for your perspective on this. And folks can visit hometownheroesradio.com. They can download your podcast there, I'm guessing.
Absolutely, they can. And you can browse through and find some incredible folks. And thank you for what you're doing. Telling the stories of these veterans is a really important thing. It makes such a difference. And I'm so glad to know that you're doing it in so many important places.
Well, back at you, brother. And you have a happy and safe Independence Day. And we'll get you on for a full show sometime, if that's okay with you, if you're not, you know, calling a baseball game or something somewhere.
Fair enough. Anytime, anywhere.
All right, Paul. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening today, ladies and gentlemen. Please enjoy a safe Independence Day holiday. Until next time, all policies and procedures are to remain in place. Take care.
You've been listening to American Warrior Radio. You can hear over 150 episodes of this program at AmericanWarriorRadio.com.